The preseason AP poll is out for college basketball, and the Gonzaga Bulldogs are way too low, at least in my opinion. But to make sure I'm on the right track, I got Andy Patton of Locked On Zags to join me to make sure that I'm in the right spot. Andy, is the Bulldogs too low in the AP preseason top 25? That's the biggest question I have on this one.
Yeah, you know, it's the lowest ranking since the 2012-2013 season for Gonzaga, which at that time, the Zags had never even been ranked number one in the country. They did, in fact, do it that year. So it certainly feels like maybe a little bit of a serendipity here as we come back around. Perhaps the Zags will get themselves back up in that top five, maybe even number one conversation. But ultimately, yes, I think it's too low. I did my top 10 rankings for Locked On College Basketball, my top 25 rankings. I had them 15th. I don't think 21st is egregious, only because this team is a little hard to pin down right now. They have a lot of veteran talent, a lot of players who are very experienced, who've been playing college basketball for a long time, but they actually only have four players on the roster who played at Gonzaga last year. One of them only played in 10 games, and Ismail Adiani. One of them was kind of a bit rotation player, and Emmanuel Nchente. Of course, the other two are your superstars up front, Braden Huff and Graham Ike. But everybody else, you know, there's some guys who are in the system. Steele Ventress has been here for 2 years, but he has not played because of injury. Jalen Worley and Braden Smith were both here last year as redshirts, but they didn't play. And then I think the big question is the status of Grand Canyon transfer Tyon Grant Foster, who committed to Gonzaga in late May, but as of right now still is not eligible to play for Gonzaga this year. He was granted a practice waiver, which means he is with the team and able to participate in practices, but the NCAA is still looking into his eligibility status for this upcoming season. He was their prized addition in the transfer portal, and so not knowing whether the team's, you know, projected probably third leading scorer, a guy who was a 20 point per game scorer 2 years ago for the Lopes, not knowing if he's going to play certainly put a bit of, I don't want to say pressure on the AP voters, but it made it more difficult for them to figure out where to slot this team in with Grant Foster, with a healthy team. If Mario St. Superi, the star freshman guard, you know, if he's able to take that leap, this team could absolutely be top 15 good. But there is also a reality where Grant Foster doesn't get eligible and, you know, Mario struggles a little bit in his new role. And this team is kind of in that 20-25 range. So I give them the benefit of the doubt. I've had them 15th. I think most other places have them right around 20. So I don't think it's egregiously low considering the circumstance, but I'd be pretty surprised if Gonzaga doesn't pass that throughout the season.
Let's put all those scenarios together and then add in, of course, losing the Sweet 16 streak that ended last year with their loss to Houston. Which one, if you had to pinpoint to one, Andy, I know this is tough for you. You write about the Zags. You talk about the Zags every single day. If you had to pinpoint one reason why the voters are lower than expected on Gonzaga, what do you think it'd be?
I think it's concern about the backcourt in particular. I don't think anybody's overly concerned about Graham Ike and Braden Huff. Now, I will tell you that my answer, my biggest concern for Gonzaga is actually the opposite. I am concerned about the front court defense in particular. I think that's a huge area of concern, but I suspect the voters are more concerned about is Braden Smith, who transferred from Colgate, he was the Patriot League Player of the Year, but is he that guy? I mean, I don't think anybody's expecting him to be Ryan Nembhard because Ryan Nembhard had more assists in a single season last year than everybody in the history of college basketball except for four players. So that is an unreal bar. And before it was Ryan, it was Andrew Nembhard, who's now killing it in the NBA. Like the point guard play at Gonzaga has been extraordinary, really, for pretty much 25 years, but specifically in the last half decade or so when it was Suggs and then Andrew and Ryan Nembhard. And Braden Smith's probably not going to be that level of player. And so I think there's concern that, hey, maybe this backcourt isn't quite as good as, you know, as Andrew was, as Ryan was, even as Nolan Hickman was. And so there's this concern that, well, Gonzaga's kind of needs that guard to stir the drink. They have this continuous motion offense. They're really reliant on guards who can navigate the pick and roll, who can get out in transition and go. And while I think Braden Smith is more than capable of that, and I believe that this past year spent redshirting and soaking up information from Ryan in practices every day will make him immediately ready to help this team and be a big time player at the point guard position. But I think nationally there is more concern about whether that's going to happen. Again, same conversation with Mario, whether he's ready to to step into a role. I mean, European players, even experienced players, even players who've played at a high level like Saint-Exupéry has, they often struggle to adjust to the game of college basketball. And he didn't spend a lot of time on campus because he got here. And then a couple of weeks later, he went back to Spain to join their Eurobasket roster. And so I think there's just a little bit of concern about, you know, again, we mentioned the only having four players return who played for Gonzaga last year. Three of them are centers. And then one of them is Emmanuel Nwagente. So every other guard on this roster has yet to ever play in a single game for Gonzaga. While I think that the continuity is better than people think because how many of these players were practicing with the team last year, I think it's reasonable for the national media to look at a backcourt where nobody has played on the floor together and think, well, maybe this team won't be as good as we've seen in the past.
I love the fact that there's a little bit of a, dare I say, doubt for a Mark Few team heading into the year, especially what they have for them. So, all right, take me through the rest of this. What is your thoughts? Does the AP poll even matter? That's really what I got asked here. Does it even matter?
You know, not really. I think a lot of the feedback that I've seen after, you know, having a conversation on my show about the AP poll, like a lot of people have kind of responded and said, well, good. Like, it's good for us to have a little bit of a chip on our shoulder, a little bit of a bulletin board material. And it's also good to maybe come into the season without those super sky high expectations. And last year's a very, very good example of that, because last year Gonzaga started the season ranked fourth in the AP poll. And then in their first game of the year, they absolutely dog walked Baylor in the Spokane Arena. They beat them by 38 points. Baylor at the time was ranked eighth. So Gonzaga in their first game of the season picks up a 38-point victory over a top 10 team. You cannot set your expectations for the fans and the national media higher than doing that on day one of the season. They had nowhere to go but down. Of course, Gonzaga fans did not know that Baylor was going to be remarkably average last year, but Gonzaga also ended up being, by their standards, pretty average. And so for this year, you know, you start out 21st. If the same thing happens, you're not playing Baylor, but you are playing Oklahoma in the second game of the season at the Spokane Arena. If the same thing happens where you beat Oklahoma by 30 points, you're not going to vault up to number two or number three. You're probably going to vault up to like 15, maybe 12. If you beat Creighton the next week, maybe you get up to 10. Even so, it might not even be that high unless you destroy both of those teams. And so I think for Gonzaga, they're in a more comfortable position where they're not going to suddenly be thrust into like, hey, you know, it's mid-November and we already have top five expectations for this program. Obviously, the flip side is if you lose to one of those two very good teams, you're probably pretty much immediately right outside of the top 25. And that's a very unfamiliar place for Gonzaga. They've been unranked a week or so in the last year, but that's it. And it's unusual for this team. So I think that Gonzaga is actually kind of happy being in a spot where they're not, they don't have quite as much scrutiny on them in a season where there's going to be some ups and downs just by virtue of having such a new look roster. But ultimately, Mark Few will tell you this every single time, it really just matters how you're playing in March. And for this team, if they lose some early games, as long as they get this thing, the ship righted before March or going into March, they're going to feel just fine about it. And he's not going to be concerned whatsoever about where this team's ebbs and flows are in the AP poll. It just doesn't matter to him. It shouldn't matter to most of the fan base. But obviously it was a bit of a surprise to see them be as low as they were when it came out earlier this week.
All eyes will be on Gonzaga as they will be the new powerhouse inside the new Pac-12 in July 2026. San Diego State also going to be a pretty good team. They just missed AP preseason top 25. Before I let you go, the craziest in the kennel happened just a few weeks ago. We didn't get a chance to talk about it on this channel. Who impressed you the most? What I saw, Huff looked really good, but of course, Steele Venters really shined there. Is Steele Venters going to be ready to go? Is he going to be healthy and ready to go and make a huge impact for Gonzaga this season?
Couple things very quickly. One, San Diego State should have been ranked. I will die on that hill. I think they are a top 25 team in college basketball this upcoming season. Number two, yeah, Steele looked amazing. And by all accounts, from everything we've seen from him, from everything we've heard from the coaching staff, that his health is seemingly in a really good spot. And obviously from a, you know, 11 minutes that he played in a scrimmage game, you know, you can't glean too much from that, but he sure looked like he was moving fine. He scored 9 points. All of them came from the 3-point line. Two of them were transition threes where he beat everybody on the floor. And Steele Venters is not known as being one of the better athletes on this team. And certainly coming off of a season ending knee injury 2 years ago, and then a season ending Achilles injury the following year, for him to be able to get up and down the floor and hit those transition threes is a very promising sign. He is a little bit one-dimensional. He's probably not going to be a super impactful player for this team defensively. He's, you know, a capable passer and certainly capable of at least running Gonzaga's offense, but he's on this roster to do one thing, and that's knock down open threes at a super high clip. I don't have any doubt that he's going to be able to do that. Going back to the Grant Foster situation, that is obviously such a big caveat for this team. If Tyon is not determined to be eligible, Steel Vendors may start. If not start, he may play a very big role. I think it's possible Jalen Worley would start and Venters would kind of be your first player coming off the bench, only because I think starting Steel Venters and Adam Miller, who's the Arizona State transfer, both of them are very good three-point shooters and not very good defensively, so I think it's better to stagger their minutes as much as possible. But Steel's going to be a big part of this team regardless of whether Grant Foster plays, but I think there's a good chance that his role is actually even more important if Grant Foster is either ineligible at all, or even if he does get eligibility, it's going to take him some time to get kind of back into game shape and understanding the flow of Gonzaga's offense. So I think his playing time would be kind of lower early in the year, which would put even more of that kind of responsibility on Venters early in the season.
Personally, this is my favorite time of the year when basketball is right around the corner, and it's definitely my favorite time of the year when we have basketball in play. Gonzaga basketball is going to be so much fun to watch, and we'll have you here covered so much more throughout the season, and hopefully Andy Patton of Locked On Zags joins me. Andy, thank you so much for joining me on this segment, and we'll see you back here very soon.
Thanks, Christian.